Welcome into Talking Sports in the Couve with your host, Ryan Black. Sitting in the seat next to me, my co-host, Rip Rex. Rip, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm so great. Always great after a Knicks win.
Yeah, it was a heck of a game one, that's for sure. We're going to be talking about that a little bit later, talking a lot of basketball, talking some football, touching on the World Cup coming up. So we've got a jam-packed show for you guys today. We'll definitely talk a little Blazers basketball and some of the developments that have happened since we talked last on the head coaching front. But we have to start the show today on a more somber note because legendary Blazers head coach Rick Adelman passed away this week, and it is a loss that is felt very heavy in this community in particular. This man came in and revolutionized Blazers basketball, helped stabilize the team in the early 90s, leading us to two finals appearances in 1990 and 92, losing those finals to the Pistons and Bulls, respectively. This is a man that had, over his head coaching career, won over 1,000 games, putting him as number 10 on the all-time list in coaching wins. Very sad day. He also played for the Blazers in his playing days. So a man that has a lot of history here in Portland.
Who was on those? What was it? 92 and 90. Who were on those teams that went to the finals?
That would have been Clyde's team. So it would have been Clyde, Maurice might not have been there.
Was Cliff?
Cliff was there. Spliff Robinson, good old Spliff, was there. Rod Strickland was there at the time.
Not quite the Bonzi Wells, Rasheed, Stoudemire era.
No. Kevin Duckworth was there at the time. But just a hard loss to feel. Heading into the offseason, one of the greatest coaches in franchise history, passing away, is always hard when a franchise loses somebody that was so pivotal to that franchise, and as a player and, like I said, as an assistant, and then he worked his way up to being a head coach, started as an assistant in Portland. So his whole coaching career began in Portland, went on to coach Sacramento. That was a he was the coach when Sacramento took the Lakers to the seven game Western Conference Finals in the early 2000s.
Who was on that Sacramento team?
Chris Webber, Bibby, Peja Stojakovic. I think White Chocolate was there. I think Jason Williams was there too.
Jason Williams.
So Rick Adelman then went on to coach the Rockets. He was there coaching during Yao Ming, Tracy McGrady.
That's a good team to be coaching.
Yeah, and then he finished out his career with one of your team's former teams, the Minnesota Timberwolves. So he definitely made his way around the league. Never got the chip, but definitely got close a lot of times. When you've won that many games, you make quite an impact in the game of basketball.
So I do want to clarify, being a Knicks fan, you always. I'm not from New York. I wasn't born in New York. I don't have roots in New York. But being a Knicks fan, you've always got to kind of have a West team.
Just
so you have somebody you can get excited for and be behind. And I fell in love with Kevin Garnett. And I loved Cat when he was there. And now he's a Knick, which is even better. But I wouldn't necessarily say former, because I still got love for them and I root for them. And if they were doing well in the West, I'd be rooting for them too. But the Knicks are my main team.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing with being a Giants fan. Being a Giants fan hasn't always been the ups that everybody hopes for. So, like, I really got behind the Mike Allstott Buccaneers. I really got behind
those Bucks teams were fun, man.
Those Bucks teams were probably some of my favorite.
Derrick Brooks was a stud.
Warren Sapp. Yeah, Warren Brad Sapp. Johnson, yep, slinging it. Yep. I was always pseudo a Buccaneers fan because of those guys. So. Yeah. There's lots of instances like
forget
that.
His first name, but Joey Galloway, their receiver.
Keyshawn Johnson?
Yep, Keyshawn was there, yep.
Yeah, they had it.
After he fizzled out in Dallas.
That was such a fun group, and John Gruden coming together with that group too. It was hard not to root for them. You find teams, and I'm sure
I remember watching that Super Bowl. I remember that being one of the one of the Super Bowls I was really excited for. I bet my mom, I was young at the time, so I bet my mom that the Tampa was going to, or no,
Oakland
was going to win that game for some stupid reason. I bet like she would make me a batch of cookies and I would make her a cake. And I lost.
Well, that's not a good trade. That seems it's harder.
No, very much harder. So I remember that because I remember going over to my grandma's house and her helping me make a cake for my mom because I lost this bet. So that's my memory of that Super Bowl.
Well, your favorite team is in the news. The Portland Trailblazers have come down to three candidates for the coaching job. I just kind of wanted to get your take on that.
Yes, last time we were here, we talked about kind of the wide net that they were scouring to find the next head coach, and a lot of names we ran down. But now we have some from very good sources through Blazers Edge, three finalists coming out. The reason that it sounds like this is going to take a little bit longer than maybe the Mavericks head coaching search or the Bulls head coaching search is because Tom Dundon right now, the owner for the Blazers, is also the owner for the Carolina Hurricanes, who are currently in the Stanley Cup. So that's part of the reason that the process has kind of moved a little bit slower on this is because he's doing the Stanley Cup thing right now. But those three names that we are going to be talking about as your next Portland head coach are going to be Minnesota's Mike Norrie, Boston's Tyler Lashbrook, and acting Blazers head coach Tiago Splitter.
So give me your thoughts on all three. Go down the list.
I did a little bit of research into Lashbrook today. Started his career in the player development for the 76ers. I believe he spent
G League.
NBA.
Okay.
Development. Just as a scout, player development person, that kind of thing. And then he became an assistant coach for them. Left for Boston, I believe. It was in 23. He then coached their G League team, and he is a very innovative offensive mind. A lot of people say that it's a hire like this would be like Portland hiring the next young up and coming big name, coach kind of a thing.
Kind of like when Golden State hired
Steve Kerr. Well, that was different because Steve Kerr was coming in as a general manager. Coming from a general manager's role into a coaching role.
Okay. But it just kind of worked out.
Yeah, kind of just worked out. I would say it would, if you want to equate it to something, it might be more like an Eric Spoelstra thing for the Heat so long ago.
Which worked out.
Yeah, which did work out. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people were wondering that you know, who was going to follow Pat Riley? Which is, I remember that being a big thing at the time. It was like, who is going to have a voice enough to come in and follow a basketball genius?
And not just that, but have to coach the big three.
Right, coach the big three, but also still have to deal with Riley making all the front office.
Yes, decisions. Yes. He didn't. He was a GM at the time when they were when he was coaching.
Yeah. So, I think that would be if. I mean, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know enough about him, but off the surface, I think that's probably the best comparison. And then somebody who we spent a lot of time talking about last time, Mike Norrie, the top assistant regarded throughout the league for Minnesota. It sounds like we'll be battling with the Mavericks. Have also been really interested in Norrie to come in and be their head coach, so there might be more competition on that front.
I still see Portland as the more appealing team.
I would too, just because of the roster flexibility, the picks that we have, the ability that we can go out this offseason and make a big move. And
there's nothing better than starting a career on a team that's got a slew of veteran players, especially like some of your more star guys have been in the league a little bit longer than say a Cooper Flag.
Right. I really like who we've narrowed it down to. I'm glad that Van Gundy isn't in that final list. It was a kind of a fun thing to think about, but I like that we're going to try to go for young, fresh coach, trying to make an impact. So I think because I know a lot about Norrie, I'd be okay with it. But I also would be happy if Splitter comes back. You could talk me into Lashbrook. I'd have to look into his X's and O's a little bit more, kind of figure out what kind of team he would want to put on the floor, you know. But with us being linked to Jaylen Brown this offseason, him coming in, he would have a lot of familiarity if we went out and did make that Jaylen Brown trade. So, you know, there's things that you could talk me into all three of these guys, but I just think because of the amount of success that he has proven with the squad already, I think Splitter has to be the favorite heading in to the final round of in-person interviews and everything.
Well, so, and this is going to play a big part, I feel, in the coach themselves making the decision to take the job. But what are you going to have to give up for Jaylen Brown? Have they given you an idea of what the Celtics are expecting to be offered in order to entertain the idea? Like, because you know how they kind of put a tag on things.
I think the package is different if it's not Giannis. I don't think you have to give up all of those Milwaukee picks. The only way you give up all those Milwaukee picks is if you're doing a deal to get Giannis from Milwaukee.
Yes, but with Boston being a very still in competition in the playoffs, still trying to win now, you're going to have to give up some key players.
I agree. I think the centerpiece of any trade this offseason will come down to what Portland decides, if they want to keep Scoop or if they want to keep Shaden. So that's the first big question. Whoever gets hired as the head coach needs to sit down with GM Joe Cronin and figure out which of the two are not going to be here. There's a lot of different tradable assets on this team, one being Tamani Kamara. I think would probably be involved in a deal like that. It would be sad to see him go, but when you're getting a player like Jaylen Brown back, it would be hard to say no to. And then one or two of those picks. And I think there's different packages. They just got rid of Drew Holiday, so it's not like they want to go take on Drew Holiday. It's not like they're going to want to take on Jeremy Grant.
No, I can see them wanting. I can see them wanting a guard, either
right,
Sharp or
right.
Or,
right. That's so. Why. That's why I think that trade makes a lot of sense. And if it's not Giannis, I think it will be Jaylen Brown. Lots of rumors since we did the show last, linking Portland to being in serious talks with Boston, centering around him.
Didn't Portland trade Ants to them?
They did. Yeah, they did.
And you don't think
that turned out to be a great move because he's.
Well, a great move for you guys.
Yeah, great move.
But I'm surprised. Boston isn't soured on taking guards from Portland because of that.
You know, I think Anfernee should have been traded a couple years ago when the peak of his market was there. The appeal was there, and he could go find a better situation. Well, he never really fit in that Celtics team. It was a very weird trade when it happened. Yeah. For both sides.
Especially since he kind of, like, fit in Portland.
Yeah.
Like, that was where he was doing well.
Yeah, exactly. So I just find it fascinating because there's so much excitement about the first couple of moves. And it all starts with, like we were talking about, securing that future in bringing the head coach in and then them sitting down with the general manager and getting that game plan for the offseason formulated. But, you know, it's going to be an exciting offseason of basketball, man. There's going to be a lot of big deals coming this summer, I feel like.
A lot of moving around. I see a lot of teams, you know, because not everybody is going to find a gem like Wemby in the draft. I see a lot more teams money and expending resources to try to find a piece like that, and like scouting is going to go through the roof. But I think there's going to be a lot of teams trying to match what New York did and try to build a more complete team, a more rounded team. Something that I really love about this Knicks team is that, like, our third or fourth guy on the roster is a number one on a lot of teams.
Right. No, 100%. And I mean, a big part of that is because, you know, Jalen Brunson is one of the most selfless superstars in the sport today because he took far less money to help make the Knicks better and sacrifice his own pocketbooks because he saw and wanted to be a part of a winning team, and he knew how much that would help the organization being able to spread that love around.
Yes, taking pay cuts so that guys that are legitimately his friends and former teammates can be on the team.
Villanova 3, baby.
Now, granted, do I agree that he should have taken the pay cut for somebody like Mikal Bridges during the regular season? No. During the playoffs, he's been doing what we need him to do. I won't say that he's great. I won't say that he's the best, a good move. There's no world where an NBA team needs to trade 5 first round picks for a player.
The trade market in basketball is so weird, dude.
It's
so bizarre. The way teams throw around these first round picks. In these weird trades right now is crazy. It just feels like we're playing 2K. Like, I read through these trades sometimes, absolutely. And I'm like, is this straight off the trade finder? Because where's the logic in this deal?
Yeah, you're just throwing picks at people trying to get players.
Right.
Like,
I mean, we all love a good 2K rebuild, but man alive, 5 picks for Mikal Bridges is crazy.
Right, and you don't know what's coming in 2030. You don't know what's coming in 2032. And those are the picks you have to give up.
Pick trading has become weird. It almost is like they need to revisit that, you know, gap of how far can you trade your picks in the future kind of a thing.
Well, and I think there is going to be something to pick trading because of you don't have as likely of a chance of getting that first round ping pong ball now, so it's not as valuable to be like, here's our star, give me all of your first picks in order to, like, hopefully get the first pick.
I mean, look, Indiana just learned that in the hard way with the trade they made for Zubac in the offseason. And now they're stuck with a pick that they thought was going to be, you know, a top 5 pick, and because of the lottery it's not, and now it's not their pick.
And that's another thing too with these pick trading and stuff. You can kind of tag, like, you can only get it. Yeah, you can only get it if it's not top 3.
Well, that's what messed up Portland in that Chicago trade for so long. It was lottery protected, and Portland kept just falling in the lottery. And so every year it would be our pick when it should be Chicago's pick. But you know who is gonna kick us out and not let us make any more picks if we don't shoot it to commercial is our producer, Jono. We got to go pay the bills here on Talkin' Sports in the Couve, KXRW 99.9 FM.
KXRW programming is made possible by partners like Buckley & Associates, attorneys at law, helping injured victims seek the justice they deserve for over 40 years. Licensed in Washington State. Our diverse team speaks over 7 languages, making your rights more accessible and easier to understand. Learn more at BuckleyLaw.net. Again, that's BuckleyLaw.net. Buckley & Associates. We speak your language.
Support for KXRW comes from Kindred Vancouver in downtown Vancouver, Washington. Kindred is a community-focused general store offering bulk refillery options and supplies for sustainable, do-it-yourself living. With a focus on reducing waste and supporting clean, mindful lifestyles, Kindred helps individuals incorporate low-impact choices into daily life. More information is at kindredvancouver.com.
KXRW is supported by founding partners, Morel Inc., Print, and Marketing. Since 1993, Morel Inc. has offered high-quality, creative, and innovative solutions from their woman-owned, union-staffed, state-of-the-art print shop. Morel Inc.'s experienced staff uses the latest technology to solve clients' marketing needs. Find Morel Inc. at morelinc.com. That's MORELINK.com.
The Columbian in Southwest Washington continues to offer the most comprehensive and consistent coverage of our region and our people, despite the challenges faced by local newspapers nationwide. valued donations to our community-funded journalism project via the Local Media Foundation, pays for local reporters to provide expanded and in-depth coverage of key local issues in print and online, including homelessness, transportation, and the environment. For the most thorough daily coverage, visit Columbian.com. Please consider donating or subscribing today.
Welcome back to Talking Sports in the Coup here, KXRW 99.9 FM. Ryan Black sitting in the host seat. My man Caleb Rex sitting here next to me. We are experiencing the NBA Finals right now. Game one.
Oh, man. It was electric. It was fabulous. I had so much fun.
It was a great game. Like, the Knicks won the game, and it was a great game.
Yes, it was. It was a defensive game.
It was.
It was a chippy game.
Chippy game.
Without it being super, like...
Very streaky.
Yeah. Without it being super, like... over the top, like fights, like potential fights and things like that. That didn't happen, but it still stayed a little chippy and a little rough and a little tough. I think my favorite aspect of this, and I wanted to kind of get your take on this, the Knicks didn't even play well and still won.
I feel like you could say that about both teams. You're so right about that. There were times in the game where you were looking at this and you're like, This should be a 15 to 20 point lead for the Spurs, but they weren't hitting their shots at times either. Especially
good defense by the new
very Knicks. Good defense, and then very good defense on in turn by San Antonio. And like we talked about on the first show, this is what I want. If we can get this throughout the course of the series, at the end of the day, if your Knicks take it, I won't be disappointed, because I just want a good, compelling series. I don't want what we got last series that was a great game one, and then the rest of the series never lived up to that hype. So I'm very hopeful that these two teams can bring the same energy back and repeat that and give us a great series. And I think I feel confident in saying that's going to happen, just because of you can tell. Like, a lot of times you can watch these games and the emotion doesn't come out, but you see the emotion coming out for both teams and on both sides of the floor. And both of these teams are hungry. A lot of the times you get to the finals and a team will, you know, lose that hunger about them and, you know, not come in fighting and just give up. And one of the most important things that Wemby said after the game last night was, "I played awful tonight." Him owning that, realizing that, now I want to see game two, because I want to see what kind of shoulder or what kind of chip Wemby comes in on his shoulder and see what he can do with that and see how Brunson responds. And, you know, those guys going back and forth, and just, it's just intriguing basketball, man.
Yeah. As much as I love Brunson and how much he scores, I think the big thing is how Cat responds.
Yeah.
Because Cat played a great game.
Yeah.
He did. He played a great game. He forced Wemby to miss shots, to create to cause turnovers. He rebounded. He was leading in rebounds. Well, no, I think Hart led in rebounds, but he was right there with Hart in rebounds. He scored about an average in points, but that's because he was doing the things we needed him to do. Mm-hmm. And Brunson may have scored the 30, mm-hmm. but Cat kept everything in control and contained Wemby for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And I mean, after the game, listening, I don't know if you got to hear his post-game remarks, but he was talking about, you know, how he was playing for his mom. He got out there and it was like the nerves went away. It felt like I was playing an AAU game. It felt like my mom was watching over me. His mother had passed away. And so to hear him kind of express that emotion and to hear how much fun he had on that court in game one was an awesome thing to hear. Because at the end of the day, like he said, this is what we all dream about.
Mm-hmm.
We all dream about getting to this point. Mm-hmm. And now we're here. Let's just enjoy this, man. You know, we got to come to work. We got to put the work in. But while we're on this floor playing this game that we love, this is what we've worked our whole life for.
Oh, yeah.
Live this moment and enjoy it.
And I'm going to leave you with this, because it's my favorite quote of the game. Favorite quote of the entire game. There was a point in the beginning of the game where everybody... So Jalen Brunson's father is one of the assistant coaches. He's on the bench there.
Right, right.
Mike Brown, Kat and a couple of the other stars were complaining and angry that they just weren't getting calls. They were crying, they were whining, and Brunson's dad, as assistant coach, turns to Mike Brown, the head coach, and the stars on the team and tell them to STFU and play basketball. Yeah, that's 100% what he said. Yeah. And they were even quoted saying that in the game, that after he said that, everything kind of changed.
It's great basketball, man.
Yes, yes.
And that's what I love. Like, I looked at the officiating, and it was nice that the whistle wasn't being blown every, 5 minutes.
Yeah.
They let them play last night.
Yes, yes.
They didn't let it get too physical. It didn't get out of hand, but they let them play basketball last night.
There was no question at the end whether there was favoritism or anything. But we could talk about finals the entire time, but there's a couple subjects I really want to hear from you from. And there's two big news stories coming out of the NFL, two big trades that I really would like to get your reaction to. The Cleveland Browns traded away their star sack specialist, their best pass rusher, maybe even one of their best players of all time. I won't just go out and say that, because I know the Browns have been around for a really long time and have had some really notable players.
It's Jim Brown and then Myles Garrett.
That's it. Yeah, because nobody's beaten the sack record before. Like, that felt impossible after Strahan got to it. Like, even Strahan had to have, I'm going to give him that last one. He had to have that last one kind of gifted to him to break it in the first place. It didn't feel like people were going to reach that total again. And he did it without even having to win games.
Yeah, TJ should have had that record, but that's a topic for a different day. We're here to talk about the Myles Garrett.
You still didn't get
we're going to talk about the Myles Garrett trade right now, and how happy I am that Myles Garrett is out of my division, and how funny it is to see Seahawk fans reacting the way they are reacting right now.
Well, I was telling somebody who's not a fan of any of the teams in the NFC North, but I told them, if Trent Williams doesn't play, there is no offensive lineman in that entire division that can block Myles Garrett.
Right.
There's not, off the top of my head, there is no Pro Bowl offensive lineman on any of these guys' teams, whether they are Pro Bowl or not, that can block Myles Garrett with consistency.
Yeah, he's and especially the quarterbacks in that division,
nobody's
going to
get away from him. Yeah.
He's going to feast. There's not athletic scrambling quarterbacks in that division.
No, the closest you're going to get is if Jacoby Brissett decides to play.
Right.
And he's not very fast.
Right, right. You can argue that Sam Darnold's quicker than him.
Yeah, you could. You could.
So, like, I think it's great, because it was, I mean, the Rams had already done so much this offseason. Biggest piece being trading for Trent McDuffie, the stud all-pro corner for Kansas City. They remade already a really good defense. They did have to give up Jared Verse in the deal.
Big move.
Jared Verse is a really good young player.
Yes.
But Jared Verse is not Myles Garrett.
No.
They traded Jared Verse, a first-round pick next year, a second-round pick the following year, and a third-round pick the following year. Now, the condition on that third-round pick is fascinating, because the Rams cannot flip Myles Garrett back to another team in the Ravens division. So in the Browns division. Can't be traded to the Ravens, can't be traded to the Steelers, can't be traded to Cincinnati, or that third-round pick becomes a first-round pick.
Oh.
So if the Rams wanted to do that, they would be screwing themselves in the process. So, very interesting little tidbit on that trade in that sense. But, I think this makes the Ty Simpson pick look a lot better. They were already talking about this deal at the draft. Everything that I've heard Les Snead talk about it a couple times. The first time this conversation happened was in 2022.
Oh, wow.
That was the first time they picked up the phone and called Cleveland to try to get Myles Garrett. So this is a player the Rams have been working on getting in the building for a very long time.
Arguably a player that stayed with the Browns too long.
Way too long. I thought when he requested a trade last year, he was gone. Yeah. I was very surprised when he signed a contract extension after requesting that trade and taking the money instead of getting traded and then going and signing a deal somewhere else. But I don't know if you've heard everything. Now that deal's gone down, everybody's trying to rally Aaron Donald to come back
and join him. He says it's not out of the question. It's a matter of whether he can get himself excited enough and hyped enough to be on that game-playing level.
Right, right, which is fascinating. I mean, just to think about a playing shape Aaron Donald joining Myles Garrett on a defense feels like we're just playing Ultimate Team.
Yeah, it would definitely depend on what type of Aaron Donald we'd get.
That's why I said game shape.
Yeah, but I think even if not quite in game shape, you still have to factor for him, which pulls a blocker off of Myles Garrett and onto Aaron Donald, or off of Aaron Donald and onto Myles Garrett,
100%.
Which means one of those guys would only have one man blocking him during a play.
Right, right, and, which is scary. Genuinely scary to think about.
Yes. Another scary thing is the fact that the Patriots got better over the weekend. The A.J. Brown trade has been official. How do you feel about that one?
Man, you talk about a guy that wanted to get out of a team so badly.
Yeah, I really want to know what the issue was between him and Hurts, that they couldn't coexist to the point where he had to leave.
I don't really know. Jalen Hurts is one of those weird quarterbacks to me, because I think he is the product of being surrounded by really good players and a very, very smart general manager, and getting very lucky with the tush push, which should have been outlawed last year. It was two votes away from being outlawed last season. Now it's making its Madden debut this year, which makes me sick.
Yeah, I saw the little highlights. Shout out to Caleb Williams getting the cover, though.
Yeah, did you see the covers? They look so clean. Yeah. They look so clean this year.
Oh, yeah. Do you think that with the all of the craziness, and granted, this isn't a Bill Belichick locker room anymore, but with all the stuff that A.J. Brown brought to the Eagles, that he's going to inevitably bring to the Patriots, do you think that's going to affect winning? Because I'm fresh off a Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's a tough one. It definitely gives Drake May that legitimate target and takes away a lot of excuses.
Yeah, but what I'm not hearing, I'm only not hearing this from non-Patriots fans, but like, this trade didn't necessarily make them a favorite for the Super Bowl.
No, I think they overpaid. I don't think A.J. Brown in the current market is worth a first-round pick.
Even with being fresh off of a Super Bowl, I'm not sitting there going, oh, crap, they're going back to the Super Bowl now.
Right. No, 100%.
With an A.J. Brown pickup.
Right. No, it's not like, I mean, I told you, the second the Myles Garrett trade happened, I'm like, the Rams are now legitimately a Super Bowl team.
Yeah,
They're legitimately, I think it's going to be, I legitimately have a very high feeling that the NFC Championship game this year will most likely be Chicago versus the Rams.
And I think the only reason Seattle's not in it is because they went and got the one thing that kept the Rams out of it when they played Seattle last. It was the fact that they couldn't get to Sam Darnold.
Right.
They couldn't disrupt the offense. Mm-hmm. They could score, but they couldn't keep Seattle from scoring.
Right.
And they went and fixed that.
They had really good defensive players, but they didn't have a game wrecker on defense. They had a really good defensive team, but they didn't have one of the best defensive players in the league. And this offseason, they have acquired two of the best defensive players in all of football.
And a pass rusher. Right. So you can lock down one side of the field and then have basically your pass rushers in his face, in Sam Darnold's face, in Jacoby Brissett's face, in Brock Purdy's face.
Mm-hmm.
24/7.
Right, and they didn't have to lose anything. No. They didn't have to go out and give up any of their. You know, they still have Puka and Devontae Adams on the outside to throw the football to. It's still a fantastic team. It's one of the things where, it's like I look at a lot. It's not just about what a team adds in the offseason. It's about what a team loses. And the Rams haven't lost a ton of things. You look at some of the pieces that Seattle lost. There were some important pieces that they filled the gaps.
Yeah.
But this isn't like the same Seattle team walking in off of the Super Bowl. It's going to be a different Seattle team. Oh, yeah. Not having Kenneth Walker on that team
your number
is
one
going
rusher?
To be huge.
Yes, not having the number one rusher in the NFL is a big deal.
Yeah, 100%. So that's why it's funny to see Seahawks fans freaking out or Seahawks fans being like, oh, them getting Myles Garrett isn't going to make them much better than they were before.
It's going to make it a lot harder to get the ball in Jaxon Smith-Njigba's hands.
Yes, it is.
It's going to make it a lot harder to get the ball in Cooper Kupp's hands.
Yeah.
It's going to make it a lot harder to... Well, actually, I just named your only two stars, so...
Yeah.
Those are your only two offensive threats now that you've gotten rid of Kenneth Walker. You Seahawks fans can come at me with whatever Charbonnet BS you guys want to... That is not Kenneth Walker.
I like Jeremiah Spears, the running back they drafted from Notre Dame, the Notre Dame secondary running back.
Not Kenneth Walker.
Though. No, definitely not Kenneth Walker. That's not what I'm saying.
I know.
I just wanted to poke
at the Seahawks.
I think there's a chance that he actually might have better numbers this year than Jeremiah Love.
Okay. But, you know, he's also getting put in a far better situation. You cannot say that there's a offensive line in place in Arizona that's going to support a run game.
You can't say there's really much of anything in place in Arizona.
I like their receiving core. There's nobody to get the ball to them, but I like their receiving core. I don't dislike
Marvin Harrison Jr.
But he really hasn't done
anything in the first 2 years, three years he's been in the league.
He's also been paired up with a quarterback that doesn't necessarily...
No, I know, but he's had some drop issues.
Yeah. We're going to have to see... obviously...
For being Marvin Harrison's son, everybody expected him to come in the league and be one of the best receivers, one of the top 20 receivers right off the bat. And he has not come in and lit the league on fire like people
But you
thought.
Can't come in, you can't be drafted by the Cardinals and expect to be top in anything within the last 5 years.
No, I agree.
So I'm not using that as an excuse, but I definitely think it plays a big factor. And it's not just the inconsistency in quarterback play or coaching. It's the changing in offensive playbooks that they've had multiple times. It's the culture in the locker room can make a high end player become very lazy very fast. We've seen that example so many times with high caliber players who get drafted to teams that kind of allow them to get away with some lazy stuff, and then they stop being the same player. And we see that countless times.
Yeah, that's why it's not always a good thing to be a junior.
yeah, that's another thing.
Never,
too. It's not easy.
Never easy to follow in somebody else's footsteps.
And Notre Dame is filled with those right now. Yeah. There's a bunch of.
Oh yeah, Notre Dame is going to be like, it's going to be like playing an old game of Madden, seeing some of those names. All right, everybody, we've got more coming for you in the third and final segment here on KXRW Talking Sports in the Coop 99.9 FM.
The faster we're falling, we're stopping.
Support for KXRW comes from Kindred Vancouver in downtown Vancouver, Washington. Kindred is a community-focused general store offering bulk refillery options and supplies for sustainable, do-it-yourself living. With a focus on reducing waste and supporting clean, mindful lifestyles, Kindred helps individuals incorporate low-impact choices into daily life. More information is at kindredvancouver.com.
KXRW is supported by founding partners, Morrell Inc., Print, and Marketing. Since 1993, Morrell Inc. has offered high-quality, creative, and innovative solutions from their woman-owned, union-staffed, state-of-the-art print shop. Morrell Inc.'s experienced staff uses the latest technology to solve clients' marketing needs. Find Morrell Inc. at morrellinc.com. That's MORELINK.com.
The Columbian in Southwest Washington continues to offer the most comprehensive and consistent coverage of our region and our people, despite the challenges faced by local newspapers nationwide. Valued donations to our community-funded journalism project via the Local Media Foundation pays for local reporters to provide expanded and in-depth coverage of key local issues in print and online, including homelessness, transportation, and the environment. For the most thorough daily coverage, visit Columbian.com. Please consider donating or subscribing today.
Support for KXRW comes from Kindred Vancouver in downtown Vancouver, Washington. Kindred is a community-focused general store offering bulk refillery options and supplies for sustainable, do-it-yourself living. With a focus on reducing waste and supporting clean, mindful lifestyles, Kindred helps individuals incorporate low-impact choices into daily life. More information is at kindredvancouver.com.
KXRW programming is made possible by partners like Buckley and Associates, attorneys at law, helping injured victims seek the justice they deserve for over 40 years, licensed in Washington State. Our diverse team speaks over 7 languages, making your rights more accessible and easier to understand. Learn more at BuckleyLaw.net. Again, that's BuckleyLaw.net. Buckley and Associates. We speak your language.
All right, welcome back to Talking Sports in the Couve, KXRW 99.9 FM. We have one final segment for you on this lovely edition. We're here to wrap a bow on things. This is Ryan Black, my co-host Rip Rex. Rip, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm good. I'm excited to listen to this segment because this is, for those listening, there's not a lot of things that Ryan will rant passionately about. But when he does, you get a lot of good stuff. You get some good laughs. You get like it's great content when Ryan feels passionately about something. So I'm going to unleash the pin and toss the grenade into the room and let it, and we're just gonna see what happens. But let's get a Ryan Black reaction. Mind you, he is a massive soccer fan, a massive football fan. He loves his West Ham Irons.
We'll touch on them here in a second, too.
He loves his Portland Timbers.
We will also be touching on them in this rant. this has become just a soccer rant and then World Cup rant as well.
But what we want to hear about is I want to hear from you on how you think your home country is handling hosting the World Cup.
It has been a colossal disaster.
Fumble?
An absolute cluster. Just a mess and a half. Everything from the, you know, ticket allocations and how ticketing has been handled through FIFA and the website and the price gouging down to the host cities and sub-host cities. And, you know, this is also not just an American tournament. There's games being held in Mexico and Canada. So this is the first multi-country World Cup, something they're getting ready to bring forward and doing more multi area World Cups in the future. We are the test dummy, in air quotes, for it. And looks like we are being the dumb ones that are being tested. That is for sure.
Is Mexico and Canada doing better?
I don't know because I haven't read or heard as much about what's happening at the host sites down there and happening at the arenas and everything. But all the corporate names have to come off for FIFA. So, you know, MetLife Stadium on the final day of the World Cup for the finals won't be called MetLife Stadium. It'll be called the New York Stadium. So it's stupid things like that. And then it's things like, you know, the artificial turf that has been used in football stadiums have to use real grass for World Cup. So they've literally had to lay concrete on the AstroTurf surfaces and then put down padding and then put down new turf on top of that. And I've heard that there's been issues with the way the ball is bouncing, and a lot of people think it's going to impact the game and the quality of football that we're going to be seeing for the next about 2 months and a half or so.
So I got to ask, this is going to be a weird random question, but seeing highlights of different when football games get started, soccer games get started, the players are usually walking upstairs to get on the field. Mm-hmm. Is that because they're raising it above like that? They have to lift the field up so much?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
Well, most of those are just pitches. Most of them are just like, it's kind of like,
it's a design thing.
It's kind of like dugouts in baseball. Oh, you know, okay. It's kind of like the clubhouse is connected through the, you know, stairs that they walk up with the referees and that
kind
of thing.
Yeah.
So I think that's more what you're referring to than like it being raised or not, because most of the time this isn't a, you know, this, they're just playing, yeah, they're just playing on pitch. And, you know, if it's not a FIFA game, then it doesn't have to be played on real grass. It can be played on artificial grass.
And they're picking the NFL stadiums purely because they can hold more people, right?
Exactly, yeah. The only venue that is used out of any of the places for soccer predominantly is SoFi up in Seattle.
Right.
With the Sounders. So they're probably the best ready and adjusted for, you know, something like that, because that stadium hosts a lot of soccer. They're ready for that kind of thing. But I mean, I was just reading today that they're voting in the next couple days in California, the workers on a potential strike during the World Cup, which would just throw another crazy layer into all of this.
Workers?
The stadium workers, concession workers, attendants, you know, everybody that makes the heartbeat of the event.
Yeah.
Everything important.
Why is this getting so bad?
I think we were all trying to prepare ourselves, and we looked at the calendar and we're like, oh, looks like the World Cup's this summer. Better figure this all out now, I guess. It just feels very thrown together for something that we've known about for a very long time. And, you know, there's all of the political things at play with, you know, Iran qualifying and not being able to participate and maybe being able to participate and now being able to. So it's been a lot of the political stuff is kind of rolling through, and, you know, you've already seen a lot of countries and fans who have said they're not coming to the World Cup. And so now a lot of people are wondering, you know, how attendance is going to really be at these events and these games, especially like games that, you know, are just super random nations thrown together. So there's so many different layers to the World Cup thing and how poorly managed it has been.
It just feels like a bad time for the country to host any other countries coming in.
Yes.
Just feels like this isn't the ideal time.
Yes.
We're just not in a place as a country to be able to host other countries that could judge us.
And it makes me nervous, because we've got the Olympics coming in 2028. So this is, you know,
and we've been very lucky when we've hosted the Olympics. I feel like major things have happened. Every time we've hosted the Olympics, I feel like we've had a major thing happen in the United States,
mm-hmm.
that brought people together.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to go back and fact check this, but I'm pretty sure we hosted an Olympics shortly after having like the whole 9/11 thing.
Salt Lake City 2002.
Yes,
that
exactly.
Winter Olympics. That was the first Olympics I remember being excited about.
The entire country was brought together, and all the other neighboring countries were like, we're with you guys too. And this, it felt very unified.
Yeah, that was the first Olympics that I remember getting excited about as a kid. I remember staying up late and watching, or actually it was early morning, and watching the opening ceremonies and getting excited for the hockey and the bobsledding, because I had just watched Cool Runnings. Great movie, fantastic movie. If you've never seen Cool Runnings, go on Disney Plus and watch Cool Runnings and just laugh. Great. Oh, God, I love John Candy, man. Oh.
Just a legend. He's got a
legend.
Great documentary, by the way.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. I'll have to check that out. All right. This isn't Rex's World. you saying that just reminded me of that Olympics, because I was like, that's when I really fell in love with like the Olympics.
But we've been very lucky. Okay, lucky is a bad term for that. That's not a good. It's worked out to the point where we've been very solidified.
Stars
very
have
together.
Aligned is what you're trying
very,
to say.
Yes, everybody suddenly is very together and very like up like arm in arm country wise. And so everybody was very eager to come to America and show that we can all stand together and be proud. And we are like, that's not something that's happening right now while we're hosting the World Cup or potentially hosting the World Cup.
It would be nice to feel unified as a country again. That's how I will say that.
So with this last little, we've got about 10 minutes left in this segment. I want you to use that as a soccer fan and just talk to the committee. Just give me from a soccer fan, just like unload.
I'm a disgruntled soccer fan.
That's what I'm saying. Unload.
You were mentioning West Ham, so let's hit on that for a second. I just experienced relegation as a sports fan for the first time, and that's a tough pill to swallow, man.
And it took you a while to get to your spot you guys were in.
Yeah.
Up to the Premier League.
Yeah, not really.
We
had only spent 1 year not in the Premier League since the start of the Premier League, so I would.
Is there something to say about the fact?
I mean, we've always been kind of near the bottom.
Right. That's what I was going to say. Like being a Premier League team that doesn't.
We've only really been in a relegation battle twice, and that was all before my fandom. Right. I've been a West Ham fan for 11, 12 years now. So I've experienced the low times, but never as low of a feeling this season where a manager just doesn't know what he's doing. Then we fire him. Made so many terrible decisions before the season that it sunk us throughout this whole season. We could just never get our footing back.
So three of your four teams that you love and follow have had coaches issues, like back to back.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. The Portland Timbers just fired Phil Nevin. So they also had a big coaching
issue. Mike Tomlin losing his job.
Yeah. Well, Mike Tomlin stepped away. Mike Tomlin didn't lose his job.
It was still a change.
Yeah.
So there's Pittsburgh. There was
That's happened with the Blazers. West Ham has been through probably 10 managers
in the past
like 8 years. The frustrating thing is we've found good guys. They've been successful, and then we got to a point where we're like, well, let's go find somebody else. This guy's had a bad couple of games, but let's go find somebody else because he's reached his potential here.
It's not like we
should have never fired David Moyes. David Moyes was great. Brought European football back. Brought a cup back to West Ham. First European championship ever. You know, and then we go at a season later and we get rid of the guy. It just makes no sense.
And it wasn't like he moved on to an upgrade of a job. No. You guys got rid of him.
Yeah, we got rid of him. He took the Everton job.
Okay, which worked out for him.
Yeah. They finished 10th in the league, I think, this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a rough time for me as a football fan, so I'm hoping that we see some good competition during the World Cup, but I'm also not, because of how rough it has been, I'm also not super up-to-date. Like, I have looked at the roster, but I haven't done a deep dive into the U.S. team roster. I don't have, you know, thoughts and predictions on who's going to win the tournament. I'm really excited to see how Yamal does for Spain, to see the breakout star that he is going to become. But going into this tournament, I'm just hoping that it's good, and I fear it's going to be a colossal cluster, and so I don't have a ton of faith. Well, will I still watch the games? 100%. But I will watch them with a more critical eye than I have in the past.
Well, I think what's not working in the U.S.'s favor is the fact that it doesn't exactly matter how the roster's built or put together because of all the extra drama and all the extra BS that's coming with the United States hosting the Cup.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be under a microscope.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't do well, they're going to get all that trickle-down anger.
Right.
That comes with it. They're gonna from the entire country, and then the ridicule that comes from the other countries.
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna have a terribly hosted World Cup, and then on top of it, the U.S. doesn't perform well.
Mm-hmm.
It's even worse. It's a trickle down.
Yeah. With the way the groups lined up, there's no way that there's very little reason we shouldn't be playing in the knockout stages. But you know, we've thought this U.S. team would be ready before, and they haven't been. And so I just have kind of very mild expectations for what I'm going to see out on the field. And also, like I said, I haven't been paying attention. So I don't, you know, I'm not 100% sure what the tactics are going to look like, you know, how these guys are going to mesh together.
Well, is that something
and
to be
all that?
Is that something to be said about the World Cup committee, that the World Cup can just creep up on us like this without anybody really getting excited or getting anticipated? I get we're not in a soccer country, but like more people get excited and talk about it. Like,
yeah.
Especially if we're hosting it.
Right.
I feel like there would have been far more news
yeah.
than just what we've gotten.
Well, I think that's because a lot of the news has been not very good news. And so it's just not getting reported on. And then for me, I'm coming at it as a sour soccer fan because my two teams have been playing like absolute dog crap the past 3 years. So I have, and then, you know, the whole Apple TV deal with MLS pulling me further away, you know, as a sports fan, one of the things, oh God, this could be a whole separate rant here, but it's so hard to watch a game. You have to have this subscription to watch this game, and this game will be on this platform exclusively, and I just want to watch the game, man. It used to be simple. You used to turn it on, or you used to go on ESPN, and they'd have 500 different little sub-feeds of really random things, and those were a lot of fun to watch, and now that costs you $30 a month when it used to be free, and it's the stuff like that is just infuriating to me.
Well, the real winners, which is funny, are the people still paying for cable because they have the easiest access to the championship games. Like, if they wanted to watch the Knicks and Spurs, they can tune into that. Mm-hmm. They want to watch the Stanley Cup. Very easy to tune into. The same, any major sport is going to be played on regular TV. Right. So those people that are like, I still see the value in holding on to Comcast or AT&T or whatever, they get to regularly see those games. Now you don't get to see, like if you're like me and you're a New York fan, or if you're like Ryan and you're a Pittsburgh fan, you don't get to see those games right. unless they're put on prime time, but right. you at least get to see some of the games for free. You got to pay for the entire NFL package to see one team. You have to pay to see every team, basically. Mm-hmm. Have the access to every team just so you can see your one team.
I mean, me and you have been talking about this since we were in high school. Why is there not a way where you can simply go on the NFL, your fans' website, subscribe, and be able to watch your team's games? I don't need to buy the whole NFL season ticket pass for $400. Charge me $120 and guarantee that I get all my Steeler games every year. I'm in.
Yeah.
100%
in. 100%.
I think you would be as a Giants fan too.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's infuriating that the leagues don't recognize the simple things in front of them to make, because everybody's like, let's make the fan experience better. Allow us to see the games. That's step one in making the fan experience better. Making the game accessible again.
Yes.
And that's how you grow things and grow revenue in sports.
Yes, and then step two becomes far easier in making it easier for fans to be at games. You can't even get a ticket a lot of the times for any kind of reasonable price.
No, nosebleed seats for game one at Madison Square Garden are $5,000.
Yeah.
$5,000 to sit in the nosebleeds and not even see anything.
Yeah.
To just be in that building and experience that electric atmosphere.
Yeah, just so you could see your team win a championship that hasn't won since 2000. Wouldn't you think you'd want more people in the building?
Most definitely. You definitely would. This has been a fabulous, fabulous episode of Talking Sports in the Couve. You guys got to witness a little bit of a Ryan rant today. But hey, like we were saying, we don't want you all to get price gouged in the future. So we got to end this thing, say goodbye, and wait till next time here on Talking Sports in the Couve with Ryan and Rip. Thank you so much. Signing out till next time.